Blog Talk Radio.
I'm going to start with a song.
It's almost time now. It's almost over. Sooner than later, I'll be dead and gone out of this world. Out of this world. And I guess that I'll miss some of the good times, but it'll be fine for me to be moving on out of this world. Out. Body. Nothing will hurt me. I'll be so happy out of this world. Out of this world. And you all will miss me. Then you'll forget me, but that won't upset me, 'cause nothing will get to me out of this world. Out of this world. Out of this world. It's almost time now. It's almost over. Sooner than later, I'll be dead and gone out of this world.
Good evening, everyone. And this is Carl from Incredibly Strange Films, Film and Stuff, and Deviant Legion. We want to welcome you to this podcast where we're going to do a quick memorial to a number of celebrities who passed away in the last month. And with me today, joining me is Miss Vicki Love. Vicki, nice to have you with us tonight.
Well, thank you, Carl. It's a solemn thing to say goodbye to our favorite people, but I believe that it's necessary. And so that's why I'm here.
Oh, absolutely. Well, again, it's really good to have you with us. I thought we would start off because one of the people that really, when I saw that he had passed, and then I saw this wonderful tribute to him, and that would be Bernard Cribbins. Now, Bernard Cribbins is an English actor. He did a lot of children's TV. He was in a film called The Railway Children. He also was in Frenzy by Hitchcock, but he's best known lately for his role as Wilfred Mott in the reboot of Doctor Who, the new reboot, and this was with David Tennant. And I thought we'd start off with you and what you thought of the character and how he portrayed it, and so on and so forth.
Well, it's been a long time since my own grandfather passed away, and I was very, very close with my grandfather. And so to see the relationship that Donna Noble had with her grandfather, it was very heartfelt, soulful, and much like my own relationship with my grandfather. So I found it special. A lot of people did. A lot of people found Dr. special because he imbued this sense of, yeah, I might be old, I might be a grandparent, but you know what? I still have dreams, and I still have dreams for my family, and I still love my grown-up child, Donna's mother, and I still love my grandchildren, and I still have worth within myself, because his character was written with an arc that was intertwined with David Tennant's Doctor Who, or Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And so his character and the way that Bernard portrayed him means more than simply this really awesome character. And so it was sad to see that he had passed away, just because it's like, oh, he'll never be able to guest star on the show ever again. You know, those kinds of things.
You know, for me, when I was rewatching it about a year or so ago, I went through every episode, and he's an adjunct character. He actually is a companion for a short period of time, but he just had so much, you know, heart to him, the character. And the relationship, you know, you talked about the relationship with Donna, but his relationship with the doctor too was really special. And he played it also with a good sense of humor. And you know, when I take a look at the other parents and family members of the companions, like Martha, they were very anti-doctor, not Wilfred. You go with the doctor, go. She's with the doctor. She's, you know, he loved
the stars.
She's
fine, yeah.
He loved the idea of aliens, and he was just agog that he met one. And it was just like,
yeah,
he was a child again. And that sense of innocence that he portrays is wonderful.
Yeah.
But also he has such an arc that there's regret. There's everything in this character. That is just so amazing, and he plays it so well.
There's also a deep wisdom, a super deep wisdom, because he, you know, he gets giddy and excited like a child. He looks at the stars and looks at the doctor with awe. And yet there are moments in his character's arc where he has to be the wise one, and he has to say, go do this, go do that. We need to allow Donna her space. We need to protect Donna. Doctor, you need to do this. Doctor, you need to do that. We find him giving advice and help, wise type sayings and things to the doctor, who is 900 years old. And so we find all those things that a grandfather is supposed to be, we find them in this one character.
Oh, absolutely. Now, one thing, I don't know if you know this or not, but in looking at his IMDb, do you realize that's the second time he was a companion to the doctor? Did you know that?
Yes, I did know that. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah. So he was the companion Peter Cushing's doctor in the film Daleks 2150
right.
AD. And,
right.
and this is when he's coming off of his work with Peter Sellers and that. And now I haven't seen that in years, but I saw clips of him as a young man doing this. And he's perfect for it. You know, just you know, it's really nice to see that he has this connection that goes way, way back to Doctor Who. You know, the other thing is the Railway Children. Anyone who's young, and particularly British, but I remember seeing this movie in the 70s, he plays the kindly railway station manager to these three kids that are looking for their father, and he doesn't come off the train, and so he helps them. And just a wonderful actor. And so we just definitely wanted to take a little bit of time and give him his due. You know, I mean, he was particularly in children's TV for Britain. You know, you've got the Wombles. You've got also not too long ago, he did Jack and Nori and also Coronation Street and Old Jack's Boat. But he worked until the day he died. So, you know, just a great actor.
Well, actually,
when
you say he worked until the day he died, he was actually working for the 60th anniversary of Doctor Who with David Tennant and
Catherine Tate.
I can't think of her name, Catherine Tate. Yes, thank you. So he was actually working right now, that July, on the 60th anniversary. And so I'm sure on set, it must have been really, really hard for everyone this past week.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. Because he had just finished that like a couple weeks previous to when he passed. So, now we have a number of people that, you know, we want to talk about. And I'm going to give this one to you, but I know you have a love of Tony Dow and for many, many reasons.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I was a kid, I used to watch the reruns of Leave It to Beaver. I don't know if you ever did, but I did.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
I used to love all those old reruns. And so Leave It to Beaver was one of them. But Beaver always was just a little too, I don't know, dumb for me. I don't know. I always liked his brother because he always was like, come on, Beavs, you're so dumb. Let's go do this. Or, you know what? You're just a kid. I'm going to go do my teenage stuff, right? So I just,
right.
I liked his character. And it's really good to see that, you know, he did support himself through the years on many, 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 many television shows. But then he moved to producing and a little bit of writing and directing. And he directed several of Babylon 5, which you and I love. And he directed a couple of Deep Space Nine episodes in season 7. And he had a knack for visual effects, which he also worked with Babylon 5 on. And so he was a very wide-ranged talent in the industry. And I know that he was a really nice guy, and people loved it when he showed up on set.
Yeah,
it's really sad. Yeah,
go ahead.
No.
Well, I was just going to say that I don't really know much of what he did other than, you know, Leave It to Beaver. The one thing I do want to mention is that what I remember most is their cameo, both of them, in a Kentucky Fried movie where they played the characters as comic and, you know, sort of a joke. I remember that.
Yeah.
But all this other stuff is relatively not new to me, but I never really made the connection. So that, I'm glad you're bringing all this up.
Well, yeah. A character actor needs to work once a year on an episode of television to make a living. And he did that all throughout his acting career up until about 2003-2004. He was acting, but in between that, in the late 80s, mid 80s or so, is when he started branching out to his other interests, which I find admirable in a person, because some of our friends don't like certain actors. But when I find out that those certain actors or actresses are branching out and doing other things in the industry, writing, producing, directing, visual effects, I'm like, well, maybe they did that for a certain reason to get in to do this other thing, and look at how great they are at that other thing. When you branch out in your field of knowledge and you're a nice person like Tony Dow, people respond. And I think that's what I respond to with Tony Dow, is his big heart, and that he was not a jack of all trades, but he was interested in the entertainment field to use his talent in many different ways.
True. Well, you know, rest in peace, Tony. We're going to move on.
Yeah, and I was just sad to know. It just struck me as very sad to know that he died, because he was only 77. Now, Bernard Cribbins, he was 93. And we all, we should be so lucky as to live into our 80s. But to live into your 90s and still work, that's an incredible feat of human determination.
Endurance.
And so.
Endurance.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so that's, 77 seems too young to die, but when you have cancer, cancer kills you. And
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So anyway, rest in peace, Tony. Thank you for everything.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to move on to somebody that I love as an actor, best known for Goodfellas, but did so much more. Paul Sorvino passed away a week and a half ago. And he was 83. So he had a good, solid life. What can you say about Paul Sorvino, if anything, Vic?
Oh, well, who doesn't like Goodfellas? Even someone like myself, who doesn't like gangster movies and stories so much. I mean, that's a real male thing, not a female thing. I really liked him in his early stuff as he played gangsters, right? I thought he had the real... he had it down as far as the demeanor of a gangster, or what we think as an Italian gangster, part of the mafia. And so I liked him in those films. But there were other things also that were...
Well, one of the things about Paul Sorvino that I loved, and we all think of him, in Goodfellas, but the man, there were two things about him. He was really good in a comic sense. We just did a watch about a month ago, commentary watch of The Stuff, And he plays this great, great character who's a sort of like almost like an Alex Jones type. He has a radio station and that sort of thing, and they bring him in, and it is hysterical. He plays Colonel Spears. But another thing about him that a lot of people don't know, he was an opera singer, and he loved music. And in fact, the one film you can see where he sings is Repo, the Genetic Opera. He's a wonderful singer. He sang at the Met, for God's sake. You know, I mean, this is a guy who had so much talent, and in many ways he was typecast and gangster in cop roles, basically.
Right.
But let's not forget.
Right.
But if you want to see him in a different way, he never really starred in many films. One of the movies he starred in was a John Avildsen film called Slow Dancing in the Big City, where he played this Italian guy, just a schlub, worked in as a butcher, and basically falls in love with this woman who was portrayed by Adam Ditchburn, and then goes and takes dancing lessons, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful to see this human side, which he didn't get a chance to portray as much. But the other thing I do want to mention is one of his last roles was a supporting role in a film, well, actually a TV series, which starred Forrest Whitaker, and that's Godfather of Harlem. He plays the real-life gangster Frank Costello, who was a good friend of Bumpy Johnson's, who Forrest Whitaker played. And he's absolutely fantastic in that. I watched that about a couple months ago, the whole series, and it's just fantastic. It really is. So just wanted to give him a little bit of a memorial, and we do miss him very, very much.
Well, I'm surprised that you haven't mentioned that he was in one of your favorite movies.
Well, that's what I said. I said he was in the stuff. Oh, absolutely. I said he played Colonel Spear. Okay.
Oh, maybe I just mind puffed that away. Well, he also played, you know, he would do movies, he would do TV, he would do everything. And, you know, he would do stage, as you said, he sang opera. I mean, he really just did everything. But one of his turns on television is one of my favorites. He was Worf in Next Generation, Star Trek Next Generation. He portrayed Worf's human brother. Remember, Worf was orphaned and brought to Earth, and this Russian couple raised him as their own, and they also had a son, and his name was Nikolai Rosenko, which was Worf's adopted last name. And so it was a very, very touching and very nice episode to see Paul actually just be with our character, that those of us that love Star Trek, be with this character and act as if he's known him since he was a little boy. So they ran through the field together. They played games. They got dirty together. They got in trouble together. They did all these things together. And when he was on this one episode, it stands out in my mind always as one of the really good episodes of The Next Generation, because it was like you could actually believe this guy and this guy are brothers. And so that's a mark of a really great talent.
Oh, agreed.
So,
Agreed.
I just want to mention that because, I mean, his filmography is huge. He's done so many things. Plus, I really like his daughter. I own some of her acting stuff. She does some really good B movies, actually. And so I think that his talent was even bigger than what we think with his daughter acting also. So mm-hmm. I think I'm going to miss him a lot, and I'm sad that he's gone. So rest in peace. Did we mention that he was in The Rocketeer? I just watched that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, he was in The Rocketeer. He was Eddie Valentine. The Rocketeer is one of my favorite films. He doesn't play a gangster in that one. So,
no, he doesn't.
Yeah, and then he also played Henry Kissinger in Nixon and did a really good job. You know, everyone has their idea of Henry Kissinger. And so... All I can say is that he was working up until his death because they were filming. He was actually filming a movie, and he was going to be in another movie that was announced. So very sad, very sad.
My Jurassic Place was the movie that was filming, and then he was announced for The Chameleon. But unfortunately, I'm not sure what's going to happen to those. But he's got two movies, once Cold Pursuit, which is completed, and The Ride is in post-production. So he'll be in those two films.
Right, right.
That'll release either later this year or 2023. So,
yeah. Okay,
so I thought we would move on from here. And I know that you want to say a couple things about Ivana Trump. So
Ivana Trump, I don't know if she died the way they said she died. You know, it's not my personal business. I'm very shocked that she died before her big fat ex-husband. But she was bigger and better than her husband. And she put up with a lot of abuse from him, not physical abuse. Don't get me wrong. He cheated on her. But in the end, even though I never liked Trump as my president, I thought he was just a disgusting playboy beforehand, can't manage money or anything. One thing is that Ivana was his confidant. That she held a special place in his heart. And he showed a crack in that Trump thing when she died. He loved her. Not as kissy-kissy, that Romanian thing that he has as his wife. He loved her in a deeper way. And that's speaks volumes to who Ivana really was in life. And when I was younger, I was always like, oh, how could she be with him? She is so fantastic. She is so smart. She is so. And then they broke up and she made her own life without him. And I just really admired the woman. And it absolutely made me sad to find out that she had fallen downstairs and died. Mm-hmm. That's horrible. That's just horrible.
It is.
Where were the people who were supposed to be helping her? But anyway, I think that Ivana really deserves a place in American history. I really do. So that's my own personal opinion. And like I said, I admired her. Sad cheeks on. Rest in peace, Ivana.
Mm-hmm. And I would agree with that. I mean, as far as our ex-president's ex-wives, she was certainly the one that I had the most respect for. No question. No question.
When you say that, his ex-wives, can you even mention or name the other ones? But you always know Ivana.
Marla Maples is one. That's the one he cheated on. And then, of course, there's Melania. And I'm not sure if there's a fourth one or not. I don't think so.
I don't know.
Yeah, we don't really care, except for Ivana.
Yeah, exactly.
So I have a question for you, Vicki.
Yeah.
You're 8 years old like I was back in 1966. Was there a TV show that you watched that featured a rock group? Yeah, a rock group.
Like the Monkees?
Exactly. Did you watch the Monkees?
Yes, I did.
Did you love the Monkees?
Of course I did. All my friends, we all watched it, and we talked about it on the school bus. Yes.
Absolutely. Well, unfortunately, the person behind that show, who directed several episodes and directed more films after that, he partnered with Jack Nicholson, and they brought the Monkees to life, and that would be Bob Rafelson, passed away 2 weeks ago. He, along with Jack Nicholson, the actor, basically came up with this idea, you know, once the Beatles had hit, and they had they developed this show, and it was one of the great shows. I remember loving just the whole insanity of that show. And I loved it. And then, of course, after that came the movie Head, which he directed, which totally died because basically at that point, that was a fuck you to the people other than Rafelson behind the Monkees. But also in the 70s, he developed what they call BBS Studios. And so Head, Five Easy Pieces with Jack Nicholson, he directed, The King of Marvin Gardens, Stay Hungry, the first fiction film that ever starred, co-starred your Arnold Schwarzenegger, your governor. He directed film. He directed The Postman Only Rings Twice with Jessica Lange and Jack Nicholson. Black Widow, which is a good film, and Mountains of the Moon, and then went on to direct TV and things like that. But when you talk about one of the premier people in New Hollywood in the early 70s, you have to talk about Bob Rafelson. And so I just wanted to give you that sort of intro. And I'm sure maybe you've seen Five Easy Pieces or Stay Hungry, but do you have anything else that you want to talk about Bob Rafelson?
Well, he was uncredited because it was his company, but I'm sure he had a lot to do with Easy Rider and Last Picture Show. And those are extremely important films. And so I think that his influence helped get those films made. And then, of course, The Last Picture Show, didn't it win a bunch of awards?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Well, yeah, he's just somebody that if you don't know who he is, look him up on IMDb and check out his films, because they're iconic, particularly the things he did in the 70s and the early 80s. He also, I just wanted to make a mention here, he produced Carol Channing's TV series, and He started out back in the 60s producing The Greatest Show on Earth TV series, but he was doing a lot of work. And we lost somebody pretty special. I also just want to take a quick moment. We were going to do a commentary watch a book film, but William Richard passed away, and he was basically known as a screenwriter, but he did direct a film, which I totally love. Unfortunately, we had to cancel the commentary watch, but he did a film called Winter Kills with Jeff Bridges, and there are so many people in that film: Richard Boone, John Huston, Sterling Hayden, Elizabeth Taylor is in that film. He only directed two films, but that one is very special to me. And though many people don't know that film, and I'm pretty sure you've never seen it, Vic, I just wanted to give a shout out because that one hit me because I love that film. There's a wonderful YouTube of him and Jeff Bridges reuniting after 35 years talking about the film. And you could still see that the two of them just adore each other. And it's really something special. So, you know, you may only have one or two films that, you know, you're possibly known for. And particularly with Winter Kills, it was basically, there were a lot of difficulties and never did get released correctly. Let's put it that way. But over the years, it's gotten a great, great cult following, and it's certainly well worth watching. So just wanted to mention William Richard. Okay, so I know another one you want to talk about is someone that we remember from our childhood. And he, along with Forrest Tucker, were the heads of a particularly really bad cavalry group, along with Ken Berry. And, of course, I'm talking about F Troop. We lost Larry Storch. So, Vic, I'm going to give you that one.
Well, you know, like I said at the beginning of the show, when I was a kid, I loved television. You know, our age of people, television, we watched black and white turn into color. Television was like this, I don't know, dessert. It was like this thing that, it was almost a magic box for us. And so, streaming actually is, I love streaming, don't get me wrong and all that, but it takes away the magic that we grew up with. And, you know, with the Leave It to Beaver reruns and the Gilligan's Island reruns. And I always loved F Troop. I love the humor in F Troop more than I loved the humor in Gilligan's Island. And I always just went along with these crazy stories of these poor soldiers out in a fort with all these crazy, silly things that would happen. And so I really loved Larry Storch in the role. And so what can I say? I grew up with that. And I grew up with Larry Storch in my life as a kid. Probably up until I was 10 or so, I was watching F Troop. So that's special, extremely special to me. And I watched him in other shows that he guest on, and you know, all those other shows, all those older shows and everything. But it was always the corporal, whatever his name was, in F Troop.
Agon. Corporal, yes. Randolph Agon.
Agon. And that was definitely my connection to him. And so every time he'd pop up in another show that I was watching, yay, I'm so happy to see Larry Storch. I'm so happy to see him working. I'm so happy to see him bringing to life a new character. But he will forever be my F Troop go-to guy.
Now, for me, Larry Storch, I knew him. I think I first saw him on Ed Sullivan stand-up, and he was a comedian, of course. But
right.
But one of the things that I remember particularly was his voice. And he did a lot of early voiceovers. And one of the characters I remember is Phineas J. Whoopi from Tennessee Tuxedo.
Right.
And he was wonderful, and he did so much over you know, and even before he did like The Great Race with Tony Curtis in the film, but he did all of this stuff. He was actually, do you realize that he was the first animated Joker? Did you know that?
You know, there's something in me that says, yes, I did know that.
Okay, because the Batman Superman
hour
in 1968-69, he was the Joker. And this is way before Mark Hamill. You know, but yeah, I mean, you would see him all over the place. I remember The Flying Nun, My World and Welcome to It. And he was on an episode of Lancelot Link, Secret Chimp. God damn it, I love that show. And
yeah,
Groovy Ghoulies, too. He played Dracula and Groovy Ghoulies. So, yeah, I mean, the guy was all over the place. And one of the last times I saw him, there was a movie about a particular joke that is so bad that it's so filthy and so dirty. And it's called The Aristocrats. And he's in that Paul Provenza did a whole documentary on this joke. And he's in that film, and he tells his own version of it. And it is filthy, and it is wonderful. And thank God for Larry Storch. Seriously.
Yeah. And, you know, he was 99 years old. That's pretty good. He's up there with Betty White. You know, she did not make it to 100, and neither did he, unfortunately.
But, yeah, I mean, they're wonderful comic actor, character, just one of those guys that you just love, because how can you not?
Yeah. One of those guys, he's like Cribbin, like Bernard. He's such a good actor, and he got along with people. People loved him. People wanted him to, they'd call him to work. You can tell if somebody is easy to work with by their filmography. They've worked a lot, and he never really stopped working until he just couldn't anymore. And so, that's hats off to Larry Storch.
Absolutely.
For being 99 by his great acting, his comedy career, his albums that he made, his stage shows, all of it.
Agreed. So now we've been talking about entertainment people, but there's a major sports figure that passed away 3 days ago that I talked to you about, and at least we want to mention him. And that would be the great basketball player, Bill Russell. Now, so you know, when I mentioned that to you, I was actually kind of surprised that not only did you know him, but you loved him. So talk about Bill Russell for us.
Well, I saw Bill Russell in Phoenix one time. My father, among the many things that my father did, he used to make extra money by working at the Coliseum as a security person, and we used to get to go to lots of basketball games. You know, they're the Phoenix Suns. And so we used to go to basketball games, hockey games. That's where my love of hockey grows from. And so one of those basketball games, I was there, and there was Bill Russell. And he was just not too far from me, because when my dad would put us wherever he'd put us in the audience, sometimes we'd get really close to the players. And it was just so cool, because I knew who he was. And he seemed like, you know, I'm a kid and I'm watching him, because he's this big star to me. And so I just watched him and I listened. And he was a really cool guy, along with being a most fantastically great basketball player. He was laughing. He was joking with people. He wasn't being mean. He was just being, I don't know, cordial and having a good time. And so...
And being human. He was human.
Huh?
You
know, what?
He was human. He, you know, he didn't have any pretension about it, right?
Right. And, yes, he was unpretentious. That's a good word for him. And so, yeah, I had this kind of like, I felt really special that I got to see him behind the curtain, as you say. At the time, I just thought I was special. I'm just like, I'm so special, I can see Bill Russell like that. So, yeah, I never saw him play, though. I didn't. I don't even know why he was there, of course. I don't know. I was a kid. But he was there. He was just, he was there. So anyway.
Well, you know, my dad had a great love of sports, too. Now, we weren't really into basketball because Pittsburgh didn't have a basketball team. But whenever you had the Philadelphia 76ers and the Boston Celtics play, it was always Bill Russell versus Wilt Chamberlain. And let me tell you something. To this day, I remember being a kid and watching those games and seeing the two of them go at each other, and it was just magnificent. And one time, you know, Wilt would win, and the other time Bill would win. It was like two heavyweight boxers with great respect for each other, just saying, beat me today. Let's see if you can do it. And he was a phenomenal player. Phenomenal. And so, yeah.
Yes.
That's what I remember.
The Phoenix Suns and the L.A. were always rivals, you know, because we're just right across the desert from each other. And so I'm pretty sure that, I'm not sure. I'm not going to say that. I saw Wilt Chamberlain play. And you don't really see players like him and Bill Russell anymore, because they were big and they were strong and they were muscular. Everyone's skinny and wiry and everything these days. But not these guys. They were big and strong. They were like the backfield in football, you know? They were the big guys, and people wouldn't go up against them for, you know, obvious reasons. They were like brick walls. You could be knocked down just by running into the guy. And so, Russell, he was – and you're right, because I would see those games and those playoff things and those who's better, Wilt Chamberlain or Bill Russell. And I'm just like, oh, who is better? I don't know. Let's watch this.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, so rest in peace, Bill. You gave me memories I'll never, ever forget. There's one other person I really want to focus on before we do the list of other people that passed away. And that's an actor by the name of L.Q. Jones. Now, L.Q. Jones was a stunt person who got into acting, did basically westerns, just was iconic. I mean, he was in several Wagon Trains, and he was in Branded. He did a bunch of Sam Peckinpah films, and he was in Rawhide. But your mom, I'm sure Georgia would know who L.Q. Jones is.
Oh, no, it's not just that. I see his face all the time because she watches those old Western shows and the Western movies constantly. And so, you know, he pops up all the time on her TV. And so, yeah, it's really sad to see that he passed away. Just because, to me, when I see these from the old Westerns passing away, they're in my house so much that they're almost like a part of my house, part of my family. And so, yeah, he was fantastic. And I don't know, how can you count how many times he, how many different roles he's been in, how many different times I've seen him in different roles, right?
Right.
So, and also, he was in The Patriot, all right?
Yes.
The Patriot was...
That was coming up.
Yeah, well, that movie for me was really important. And so his turn in that was really good, of course, because he was just because he was a stuntman doesn't mean he couldn't act. And he proved it over and over again. What a good actor he was, too. I mean, he kept working, right? What I said before. If you work a lot, there's a reason why you work a lot.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. I wanted to bring out a couple things about L.Q. So L.Q. Jones, as an actor, I said he was in several Peckinpah films. He was... of course, in Major Dundee, I mentioned. He also was in The Wild Bunch, but he also shared screen time with David Warner and probably my favorite Peckinpah film, which is The Ballad of Cable Hogue. And they have a couple scenes together, him and David Warner in that film.
That's great.
But the other thing I want to bring out is he was not just an actor. He was not just a stuntman. He was a producer and director. Okay? And he did two, as a producer and director, he did two pretty iconic early 70s films. One is The Brotherhood of Satan, which he co-wrote with Alvy Moore, who was on Green Acres. And then even more importantly, they partnered together with a young Don Johnson, and they wrote the script based on Harlan Ellison's novella of A Boy and His Dog.
Right.
That's L.Q. Jones. And the great story about that is the last line of that movie is a really bad pun, and Harlan hated it. went to both of them and said, "Why did you do that?" And LQ looks at him, "Because I think it's fucking funny." And Harlan looked at him like, "I don't agree," and walked off.
I'm sure Harlan didn't say, "I don't agree." I'm pretty sure Harlan probably said, "Well, fuck you. I'll never work with you again," and walked off. Pretty sure that's what
later,
Harlan's response would be.
Yeah. Later they made up. And Harlan sort of like gave it to him that at least it was a good joke, but he didn't like it. He also was in another film that I really loved too, Mother Jugs and Speed.
Oh, God. I have a story about that.
Do you want to talk about that story or you want to just say I don't
no,
want to talk
I
about
don't.
It?
No, I don't. Because, see, these are all the around that time is when I was the only person that my cousins knew who had a car. And I would take my cousins, my friends, my just people, all kinds of people, to the drive-in. And we would watch these movies and so or have other kinds of fun while these movies were on. And so,
understood. Okay. I worked as a driver, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Right. There was lots of glass bottles involved.
Boy, and maybe some bong water, I don't know. Maybe. Anyway.
They all like to drink more than they like to smoke.
Yeah, that was true of Bradford too. One other thing I want to say about L.K. Jones. So Robert Altman was dying of cancer. And for his last film, he did A Prairie Home Companion, which was a fictionalized version of the Garrison Keillor. And
right.
He knew L.Q. and hired L.Q. to play this older cowboy singer who, as he's singing, and right after he's done, he passes away from a heart attack. And L.Q. had officially retired about a year or so previous to that. And he went and he looked at the script and he says, I have to do this part. And the song that he sings is about, you know, loss and looking forward and looking backward at a life not well spent. And it's one of the most heartfelt things in that movie. And it is a wonderful, wonderful performance. And anyone who doesn't think L.Q. could act, please watch that film. Seriously, I love that film. I think it's a great film for Altman to finish on and for L.Q. to be his last acting role. So that's a movie that I definitely wanted to mention with L.Q. Jones. Finish up. Go ahead, Vic. I'm sorry.
No, I said that was good. That's a good way to remember him.
Mm-hmm. Now, just a couple other people that we should mention. So Tony Sirico passed away. He was in Goodfellas. He was in the Sopranos, and several things. He was a former mob person who became an actor, very, very much loved within the acting community. Rebecca Balding passed away. She was in several shows and that sort of thing. And also a character actor by Gregory Ibsen passed away. Really, for me, I don't know much of their work at all, but at least I wanted to give a mention to them definitely for those of you that know who they are and so on and so forth, to make sure that we give our remembrances for them too. So anything else that you want to talk about, Vic, before we get into housekeeping?
Well, yes. The only reason why I'm really here was to speak about Nichelle Nichols, who to me was more than just an actress. Nichelle Nichols was Lieutenant Uhura of the Starship Enterprise. And my friends know how much I love Star Trek. In fact, I'm sitting here at my desk with my computer and I look up and there's her face because I have a painting of the crew of the original series, the Starship Enterprise. I have a painting on the wall above my desk. And so she's present in my life all the time. And when I saw that they announced she passed away, I was doing something else and it came across my feed, and I didn't sob, I just had tears running down my cheeks, because I grew up in a very abusive family. I was scared to death of my father. I would come home from school every day, and for 1 hour every day, I had from 4 to 5 o'clock, I would watch Star Trek, the original series, of course. And I always would look at her, and she had as much power, wisdom, and knowledge as everyone else on that bridge. And I knew that because of her position right there, that women were not second-class citizens, and that someday we would achieve that place where nobody would question and say, oh, really? A woman? What is she doing here? Because no one did in Star Trek. Star Trek gave her this position of not just power, but of the regular job that we all do without questioning, oh, you're a female, can you do it? None of that. It was her doing her job, and Kirk went to her for all kinds of reasons and things, and she gave him answers all the time. He relied on her, not as a girlfriend, not as a sex partner, but as an equal. And that's who Nichelle Nichols was to me. And so I sat down and I watched Star Trek. I had lots of things to do on Sunday, and when I finished them, I took a shower and I sat down in front of my TV and I watched. And it made me sad and it made me happy. She was a pioneer. She knew what she was doing. She was mega talented, musically talented, acting talented. She could sing, she could dance. But she knew that getting that role meant something more, especially to the little girls who were watching her. And of course, to black girls, most especially, but to us white girls, it was the same. She showed us that females had a place. And so that's what I wanted to say about her. All the people that we've talked about, all we've done is talk about men, 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 men. And I'm not saying men aren't important. But she passed away and she was the big one. And I will forever before being who she
is. Well, the one thing I love about Nichelle is that what she did for NASA. And they went to her and said, would you help us recruit more women and more people of color? And so she was an ambassador to NASA, and more so actually was part of NASA, if I'm not mistaken about that. The other thing is Martin Luther King. She was going to quit Star Trek, and Martin Luther King went to her and said, don't do that because you mean so much.
Right.
To us, and she was. I mean, let's not forget the first interracial kiss. Let's not forget how much on the walls that she broke down. I mean, that's
she broke
the great
down
thing
all
about
of them.
Michelle. And the other great
she
thing about Michelle Nichols, I have to say this, is she was a great baddie and truck turner. Damn it, she was good at being bad. So there you go. There you go. One other person that passed away, and we just found out yesterday, is John Steiner. John Steiner, I'll be doing a show with Stephen Ron Keel on KSDAD, and we're going to be talking about John Steiner. But what you may, what you would most remember him from is You're the Hunter from Outer Space, and he was the overlord in Yore. He was also in Caligula. He was in a ton of Italian crap movies. And just, you know, anyone who loves incredibly strange films will have seen John Steiner somewhere. So just look forward to that show on KSDAD. We'll probably do that within the next 2 weeks. So that's all I got. Anything else, Vic, before we go into what else is happening this week at DLN?
Nope, I think that's it for now.
Okay, so very quickly. Okay, so tomorrow we are very, very happy to welcome back film director Joe Bedard. He directed God Inside My Ear, and of course, this is Tempest. And The Wheel, The Blood of Dinosaurs, his short film, is doing extremely well on the festival circuit as a new short film coming out. And by the way, Beck, I don't know if you know this, but he did a preview of his new film. And someone messaged me and said, look at this. You need to look at this. So in the scene on this blackboard, it says, ask Carl. He knows everything.
Oh,
and it's
boy.
Carl with a K. And I went to Joe, and yeah, I have a Easter egg in his new film. So I think that's kind of cool. And we love him. He's adorable. I love that man. So right now, it's August. It is the dog days of August. It is hell month of August. There's lots of heat, so for the first half of August, we're doing our commentary watches on hell and heat. And this week on Thursday, we're going to be doing a commentary watch of one of Rachel's favorite films, and that's Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. And yes, lots of it in hell, and we love it. It's a lot of fun. So join us for that. The week after that, we'll be doing The Day the Earth Caught Fire, a 1950s science fiction film, British science fiction film. And that'll be my choice for the first half of the month. On Friday, we're going to do, actually, this is Adam and Catherine Gray Mission. They're going to be doing the films of F.W. Murnau. And then on Sunday, Rock This Town Radio with TC. It's Noah's Rock Boat, and I have no idea what that means. But one thing is it may be canceled. We'll have to see because TC just messaged me today and he has contracted COVID. So we hope that TC rests up and gets better. All right. So that's what we have planned for this week. Vicki, why don't you give us a little background on what's happening with your film and that for everyone that would be interested.
Well, our feature film, Epsilon V and Cosmic Film Productions, is two-thirds of the way done with a feature film that is a psychological thriller and sci-fi, sort of horror mixed in, a little bit of horror here, a little bit of sci-fi here, a lot of psychological thriller all mixed in. And we're filming the last third of it, which is actually in outer space, our solar system. And so we're doing a lot of green screen work. And here's the thing. There's a lot of COVID going around, and one of our actresses contracted COVID. So here we go again with the slowdown. Hopefully not a real slowdown. Hopefully she's doing better, and hopefully no one else gets sick, and we can finish it up and have it out by next year's festivals. However, here's the thing that I've just learned about festivals and streaming. Some of the companies, and we've had a very small offer from Sony to perhaps they might want to buy our film. But if you buy, if you sign a contract with these streaming companies, you don't get to take your film and premiere it at festivals. You lose your rights to it, of course, you know, when you sell. So anyway, I'm a little, what can I say? The film is going along fine. It's going to be finished this year. And we only have, what, 4 more months left of this year. So that's a big thing on our table, but we're going to be able to do it. But I don't exactly know how we're going to bring it to the public yet. It's all got to do with money and who wants it more badly, you know? Mm-hmm. Who wants the film? And who's going to pay for it? So anyway, that's our film right now. So that's,
and by the way,
the
it's called Lake. It's called Lake, and it's Upsilon V Productions, right?
Right. If you want to know anything about my film, my Facebook got hacked. My Epsilon V Productions, Cosmic Five film got hacked, so I had to shut it down. We do have a website, so if you want the website, contact me on Facebook, and I will send you directly to it. Okay, for now, it's our casting calls and our production people. They go to the website and we talk and get things done. So anyway, if you want to contact me about our film, please just find me on Facebook and message me, okay?
All right. So fair enough. Vicki, thank you very, very much for being with us tonight. Just so you know, we started out with Loudon Wainwright, and in memory of all those people that have passed away that we mentioned today, we're going to end up with a song by the Jim Carroll Band. And we want to say good night and thank you very much for being with us. Good night. And here you go.
Good night.
Genesis
and
Clue, he was 12 years old. Fell from the roof on East 29. Kathy was 11 when she pulled the plug. 26 reds and a bottle of wine. Bobby had leukemia, 14 years old. He lived at 55 when he died. He was a friend of mine. Those are people who died, died. 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 They're all my friends. They just died. She broke in church. She let the gimmicks go rotten. So they died of hepatitis in Upper Manhattan. Flying in Vietnam. Drano on the night that he was wet. There were two more friends of mine. Two more friends that died. Those are people who died, died. Those are people who died, died. Those are people who died. Those are people who died, died. They were all my friends and they died.
Married to a tried out from a hotel room. Bobby hung himself from a cell in the tombs. Judy jumped in front of a subway train. Jugular vein. And Eddie, I miss you more than all the others. We'll be right back.
but Herbie sure gave Tony some suspicious proof. And Herbie said, Tony, can you fly? But Tony couldn't fly. Tony died. By ratting on some bikers. He said, hey, I know it's dangerous, but it sure beats Rikers. But the next day, he got offed by the very same biker. Wait, train.